need to know who I am, but you should know why I'm here. My grandpa, Stephen, is the author of a new exciting play called When the Break Happened in Orangeburg County. It's about our ancestors from when the break happened in 1865 until now. Many of my relatives are featured in the play, from my great-great-great-grandpa Stephen to my great-great-grandpa Stephen to my great-grandpa Stephen to my grandpa Stephen. Guess what my uncle and cousin's name are? Stephen. Go to www.thebreakinorangeburg.com to learn more. An online store has been created to honor those relatives and other families with products featuring the Break logo. Go to www.thebreakstore.com to purchase items today and help to produce this play. Please!
Welcome to a new podcast show about stuff. It's the show about stuff, the Stephen Davis Show. Here's your host, Stephen Davis.
Hello, welcome to the show about stuff, the Stephen Davis Show. Today we're going to discuss researching your family history, why it's important, how best to proceed, and what are the benefits of successfully creating a research family tree. I dedicate this program to my family, who are descendants of the survivors of the Middle Passage. They are the Davises, the Strowmans, the Bowmans, the Riggins, the Josephs, the Nelsons, the Jeffersons, the Gilliards, the Robinsons, and the Williams. I have three wonderful guests today. The first one is LaBrenda Garrett Nelson, Esquire. We have Dr. Jennifer Williams and Brother Fatim. I'm going to start first with you, LaBrenda, to tell me about yourself and how your career was. And then later on, we'll get into the meat of the show.
Sure. Thank you. And thank you for this opportunity to talk about a subject I'm passionate about, which is African-American genealogy. I was born in South Carolina in the upstate, but my parents had the good sense to move me to New York, to Brooklyn specifically, before I started school. So I went to school entirely in New York. I went to John Jay College of Criminal Justice, and then I went to New York University School of Law, where I got a law degree and a graduate law degree, and I started practicing in New York at a Wall Street firm. But then I moved to Washington, D.C., where I've been living since 1982. I went to work on the Hill for the Joint Tax Committee staff and practiced as a tax lawyer for 35 years. About 8 years ago, in 2013, I retired from the practice of law entirely. I was a partner at Ernst & Young. I think they call themselves EY now. And a couple of years before I retired, I began taking genealogy courses because genealogy had long been an avocation of mine. Like many other people, when Roots was published, I got the bug. And also having that South Carolina background, Southern folks know about their families. They keep those stories going. I started taking courses, and there were courses that weren't even available around the time that Roots was published. I learned about something called the Board for Certification of Genealogists and determined that I was going to become a certified genealogist because I wanted to know that I was doing it correctly and I wanted other folks to know that. So I became credentialed as a certified genealogist back in 2015. A year later, they elected me to the board of the Board for Certification of Genealogists. In 2019, they elected me president of the Board for Certification of Genealogists. I currently hold that position. I do a lot of lecturing and writing. I wrote a book about researching African-Americans in my home county of Lawrence, South Carolina, that was well-received. There's a long-running genealogy column that the Atlanta Journal-Constitution publishes. It said the book was a model for doing research in other South Carolina counties and other states.
Please let me stop you there.
Yes.
You didn't tell us the name of the book.
It's at Researching African-American Ancestors in Lawrence County, South Carolina. But the thing that I did in this book and that I hope to share today is that there are many books about researching Black folk who came out of slavery. But there isn't a lot written about methodology and how you do good genealogy. And I can say this because despite my law degree and my graduate law degree, I made all of the mistakes that people make when they've never really studied this as a discipline. So the message I try to impart to folks is that there are these standards to be applied. They have universal application. They can help families that came out of slavery produce accurate family histories in the same way that other folk can use them.
Okay, we're going to get more into what you just said in a little while. The next person is Dr. Jennifer Williams. Tell us about yourself.
So hello, everyone. My name is Jennifer Williams. I'm actually the daughter of Stephen. I am from Brooklyn, too, from Coney Island. I grew up in Coney Island. I actually started my career in corporate America. I worked at the New York Stock Exchange as an intern in high school. And then I worked for Moody's Investor Services for 7 years in the marketing department. And I was underwhelmed working there. So I saw an ad on the subway that said, become a teacher. And I was like, I want to help kids. I'll become a teacher. So I left Moody's in a nice paycheck and decided to join the New York City Teaching Fellows Program, where I taught in Bushwick at PS 145 and 45, both in Bushwick. I really enjoyed it. So I've been in education for the last 18 years. I decided when I was part of the New York City's Teaching Fellows Program said that they would pay for your master's because they needed teachers. So I went ahead and I got Moody's paid for my bachelor's, New York City paid for my master's. I moved to Georgia and guess what? They paid for my educational specialist degree too. So I wound up going to a program in Georgia to be an educational leadership program. And then I just continued in my doctorate. Unfortunately, they didn't pay for that. But I'm like, three free degrees, I can live with paying for one. In instructional technology right now, and am a certified poverty coach for my district. So I teach poverty strategies and development for inner city school systems within Georgia.
Now, let me tell you, when she told me she was going to become a teacher, I said to her, but you don't like kids. And she said, oh, you taught to me to give back. What could I say? Brother Fatim, hey, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. It's good to sit back here with family here. I love this.
I feel a little bit intimidated being behind the mic because you the man.
I started just like you, my brother. Just started just like you.
Tell us about yourself.
First of all, let me just say this. As we introduced each other this morning, I'm a little taken back, and I'll introduce myself in a minute. I already looked up your book.
Yes.
And the reviews are tremendous. He averaged out of five, 4.9 rating out of five. And I'll talk about myself, but I just shake my head because we walk around, and I'm so glad that I try to treat people with respect and treat them the way they treat me, because you never know who's going to be family. You just never know who's going to be family. With that said, I'm not going to mess up the Brooklyn thing. I was going to put my Brooklyn hat on. My Brooklyn hat is sitting right over there. My family, my mother was from Florence, Darlington, Pamlico, South Carolina. But my father, Stroman, was from Orangeburg, South Carolina. They came up to New York. Before my mother came up, she already had a child. When my father came up, he got married and had two children. But then things happened in life. They moved on and met one another. I'm the offspring that came out of them. That's where I'm a Stroman, born on Flatbush section of Brooklyn.
I should mention I grew up in Williamsburg.
The Brooklyn tension. When she mentioned John Jay, I was wondering what high school she went to. What high school did you go to?
I went to two different high schools. I started out at Thomas Jefferson, but then I went to a school that no longer exists, Eastern District.
I went to George Westinghouse. The Eastern District was in my division. They would beat up on us, but we beat up on them pretty well. And then Thomas Jefferson, a famous baseball player came out of Thomas Jefferson named Sean Dunston, who I played against in Sandlot. I graduated out of George Westinghouse and went on to Farmingdale College. Had scholarships to two other colleges, but decided to go into Farmingdale. Wanted to get away from home, but not too far away from home. Majored in electrical engineering technology. Graduated outstanding minority student, meaning that me and my friend had the highest GPA average of any Black minority student on that campus. I was thinking about furthering my education, but I was also in the process of hearing that people that graduate with four-year degrees were having problems finding jobs. So I decided to turn down a job at Bell Labs, who became Lucent Technologies now. And I wound up working for a company called Billboard Magazine. in the computer department, moved on from there and wound up working for some of the largest institutions, banking institutions, Bank of New York, Chase, Citibank, JP Morgan. I was a supervisor there in the computer department. So that was my first career. At the same time, I was an activist, an upcoming activist under Reverend Al Sharpton, Attorney Alton Maddox, and Attorney C. Vernon Mason. I got involved with some of the controversial cases and known cases. Tawana Brawley, I was special security officer for her. That took me into my activism. And then I entered a contest. I was listening to 98.7 KISS FM, to enter the contest and won money. When I went to pick up my money, I inquired about the softball team. I was told that Bob Slade, the late Bob Slade, was the news director at KISS FM, but he's also the manager of the softball team. So I tried out. I made the softball team. Why do I tell you all that? Because that propelled me into radio. And how did it propel me into radio? For folks that are in New York, when you watch New York One, if you do watch New York One, you've seen Dean Memminger. Dean Memminger was an intern at KISS FM, and I was a volunteer at that time. Once his internship ended, he left, I stayed. And one door opened after another, and I became a producer for the Open Line program. That was over 30 years ago. Now I am the host and the executive producer of that program due to the passing of the legendary Bob Slade, who created Open Line and some other talk shows there. And there's been some dynamic folks that have come through the doors on these talk shows to deal with issues out there. One thing that Bob Slade believed in was passing the baton. Make sure you reach back and you bring somebody on, because you will not always be sitting in that seat. And you want to make sure that if you're doing something that is very important, you want it to continue in some shape or form. So right now I carry that mantle of doing that. At the same time, I'm the executive producer for Reverend Al Sharpton, nationally syndicated radio shows, Keeping It Real with Reverend Al Sharpton, which we just celebrated 15 years working for the only Black radio company conglomerate out here that has radio stations all across the country, for the famous Miss Kathy Hughes and her son, Mr. Alfred Liggins, which own also TV One. 15 years there, and then 13 years doing Sunday Morning with Reverend Al Sharpton, which now has moved from KISS FM over to 107.5 WBLS. That's where I'm at right now.
Wonderful. Each one of you all, I have my own stories to tell, and I'm going to tell them later on. But I'm going to first start off with you, Brenda, in terms of my first question to you is, how does a person get started in their genealogy? And what is the importance of doing?
I'm going to answer the second question first, because I think that giving especially young people, young adults, information about their family history can just be a tremendous boon to them, to let them know the people whose shoulders they stand on, to give them a sense of pride if they don't have another source for that. And also, when I talk to folk about this, I talk about sharing this with people of European ancestry, because some of them think that Black people just fell from the sky and don't have much history to talk about or to be recovered. That's simply not true. And we've seen examples of that very recently. I don't know if you guys saw the story in the New York Times a couple of years back about the images of enslaved people that were taken for a professor at Harvard, and Harvard's using these images, and descendants of those enslaved people were suing Harvard. And even the New York Times quoted someone who was not a genealogist saying that he doubted that this person could trace their ancestry back to someone who was alive in the early 1850s. People have that attitude. That's the benefit of all of this. But going back to your first question, there are people who think that it's difficult to get beyond 1870 because that was the first US census when they were supposed to record all Black folk with surnames. And there are people who think it's too easy. I can say that because before I ever took a course, did three versions of my family history book. And it was a useful thing to do because I gathered information about what we thought we knew, but I knew nothing about methodology and I made mistakes. One of the things you hear at genealogy conferences is that because the name's the same doesn't mean the people are. And there are actually couples that have the same names, and people do this cursory research and rely too often on the US Census, for example, which is a great starting point, but until 1940, you didn't even know who the informant was. Most folk just look at the census and say, oh, this must be correct, and they go from there. The tried and proven method for getting accurate results is to start with someone in the present, yourself, and to trace that person back in time, tracing them to their parents, to their grandparents, and finding as much information as you can about each generation to make sure that you're going to zero in on the correct ancestor. There are so many sources even before the Civil War that would help do that. And I'll end this with just by saying that, because before the Civil War, when all of those slave states, it was prohibited to teach Black people to read and write. So few Black people created their own records. But the records created by the enslavers also tell our story. They were gifting Black people. They were leaving Black people to other people in wills. They were describing them in mortgages. There are all sorts of records that help you to recover your family history, starting in the present and going backwards and approaching it from that way.
Jennifer, I'd like to ask you, from your standpoint as being an educator, how does family history interact with teaching of children?
A child has to know who they are in order to envision their future. So in education, we really try to push embracing who you are, but also, like Ms. LaBrenda was saying, going back and trying to figure out where are you from. And I just remember when I taught fifth grade, this was about 10 years ago, I had a class one year and all the children were Black. They were like, hey, did you notice something in here? We're all Black in here. And we did a lesson, a unit on slavery. And we read a book. It was called Meet Addie. That book, Meet Addie, described slavery. The students did not believe it was real. We were talking about realistic fiction and how realistic fiction mimics life and how it's realistic, but this actual story is not true, but all the events that happened within the story were true. And the students just, they couldn't believe that there was real slavery. They just, as we were teaching the unit and talking about the Civil War and Abraham Lincoln and all, they were just like, but this couldn't be real. And it was the same year that Barack Obama became president. We had this big inauguration party in my class. We all dressed up and everybody came in. We had a class president, we had a class vice president, and they gave speeches. We talked about from slavery to presidency. That was the theme, from slavery to presidency. We did a whole unit going through the years. They were like, where am I from? Am I from Africa? They were trying to figure out where they were from. Now, of course, I don't have a genealogy background. So my limited information was like, well, ask your parents, think about it. And they would come in and tell me, my family's from Trinidad. And I'm like, who knew? And they were just finding things out about themselves. It brought a special light. It brought us together because we found how much we are alike, but we also found how diverse the class was. So from everyone sitting in the classroom, no one was from the same place. No one was from, so there are 30 kids in the class and me, and none of us are from the same place. And they were just really intrigued about later on finding out, where is my family really from? They stole us. Where did they steal us from? I was like, boo, I don't know where they stole you from, but you are not from here. This is not where your people were from. They kept on saying Africa was, they didn't realize it was a whole continent with many countries. And they were just like, there's all these different countries in Africa? And I'm like, yes, when we think Africa and our children think Africa, they think it's like New Jersey. They don't understand. Really trying to work with students to try to help them understand that we come from a place that's rich in so much history. It's sad because we don't have genealogy classes in elementary school, middle school, or even high school in Georgia. It's not part of our curriculum. I can see that your expertise would come in handy, really just giving people background and knowledge on how to search for their history.
I have heard stories from people who were in classes where they were told to do their family tree, but the little Black kids didn't know how to do it or didn't think that they could do it. So that's interesting. One of the, I know I'm interrupting, Stephen, but this subject is my thing. One of the lectures that I give is on historical context. I give that for white folk and Black folk. I start out by saying, apart from Native Americans, we've been here as long as any other group, including Europeans. We came with the Spaniards in the 16th century. And it's true that in what was colonial American, like 95% of the people were Western European up until the late 1600s, but we were here too. And half of all Black folk who were brought here came before the revolution ended. So that's it, that kind of historical context is really important for people to understand, especially when you're talking to folk who think we just fell from the sky, as I said.
Hakeem, do you have anything to say on that?
As I'm sitting here listening to this, I'm like, this is rich information. I must say, just keep listening to LaBrenda and Jennifer and realizing the precious minds of our children, the time that you are born in is your reality. Some don't understand what it has taken to be where you're at. Then when you get there, some folks believe we've overcome, and then you realize you had, it seems like a bad dream. But it, just listening, I'll be honest with you, I'm gonna say this and I have to be real. It upsets me first. It upsets me first to know what we went through in this country and what we still go through in this country and how they've done everything to destroy us as a people. And we are still able to go out there and do the kind of research like you just said, LaBrenda. You just said something that I'm so glad that you did say. A lot of us look at the census. I go back to the census and I look back and I see who was in my grandmother's house when my father was 3 or 5 or whatever. I see my aunts and uncles who now are passed on. The reason why I get upset first, because of what was done. Then I get past the upset, but then I get disappointed because then you realize when those folks that were living were around, you don't realize what information you could have gotten and received from them by just speaking with them. And yeah, now
that happens to so many people.
That's why I want to express this emotion, because I know I'm not the only one that feels this. Then, as you said, it starts with us. So what do we do? You can't get caught up in the pain. You acknowledge the pain, but what can I do? I always go back to the late Adam Clayton Powell Jr., who his anniversary of his death was this past Sunday. He said, what is in your hand? And it's what is in our hand now to go back. So I'm thinking about me, my cousins, my family now. What can we do to give back to history that my little cousins don't know their great-grandmother, who was my aunt, but I knew was walking and talking. I used to read about slavery. You would hear different stories. And when I would do more of my reading, when I would go south on vacation, one year I decided to put the book down and just visit folks I didn't know by going on their porches, introducing myself and tell them what I was doing, that I just wanted just to introduce myself, meet you, and let you be my chapter for tonight and listen to their stories. And that to me is so rich. So those folks that are living now, we have a responsibility, I feel, that know about this, that can give back. I'm just touched by this and I just wanna know any and everything. That's why I compliment Stephen, because he does a great job. Folks has asked me numerous times, are you related to Stroman on the New York Mets? I said, no, I don't think so. Stephen comes and says, yes, you are. You are related to Owens. And see, that's important. Not because he's a star, but I've been following him when he was a star in college on Long Island.
It's really, I had a cousin tell me, because we were identifying 5th and 6th cousins. I had a cousin say to me, shouldn't we cut this off at some point? Like, why are we inviting these people to our reunion? And I said to them, think about it this way. If you have children, don't you want your children's children to know each other? It's sad when people just lose connection with their relatives.
I agree.
I have two stories to tell at this point. One is something that Jennifer said earlier about knowing your family history. Early on, the pejorative term for Blacks who came from the West Indians was coconut. You'd call them a coconut because they were from West Indies. In my research, I went back on my Joseph side and found out, guess where my great-great-grandfather was born at? In Trinidad in 1792. So I had to call to send a text to my Joseph relatives and say, hey, y'all can't call any West Indians coconut anymore because you're calling yourself coconut. And that comes from lack of understanding where we come from. And the second story that I tell is sitting in South Carolina in a restaurant in Charleston with a cousin of mine, and we're having dinner and we're talking, and he happened to casually mention Oh, my grandfather was married to Mary McLeod Bethune. And then it hit me. Oh, yeah, your last name is Bethune. We never know what path it takes. I got some other wonderful stories that include you as we're going on. I do want to ask LaBrenda from Daryl Stevens, a just recently discovered cousin. And his question was, what has been the most effective method of continuing to find family members during the slave era? And actually, he has a second part to that question. Has there been any portion of the 1890 census recovered?
I'm going to answer that second part first. If you look at the census.gov website, they will list the fragments that survived the fire that destroyed most of the 1890 census. I know from some recent research that I did, for example, that the census survives for Perry County, Alabama. So you have to look at that to see what you can recover. But one of the things about taking classes is that you not only learn about methodology, you learn about sources. So there are census substitutes for the 1890 US Census. There was a special census of veterans that survived. So if, and I think, I'm pretty sure it included widows of veterans. And so that is there for, I think, every state. And there may have been state censuses taken that fill the gap. In terms of the most effective sources or methodologies, the documentation is always important. You have to do that. And then I would add DNA. But DNA on its own doesn't prove anything. It really doesn't. And it, when you get past first cousins, then you see a range of sharing that could be a range of relationships. So you really need to do the documentation, looking in the records that are available, and then pulling in the DNA test. Black people are still underrepresented in the databases of these major companies, but there are many more Black people taking DNA tests. I've not done the work myself yet, but I recently got into contact with someone who can trace their descent to a person with a different last name, but who was on an inventory on the same estate that my Garrett second great grandfather was in. And I always tell people when I lecture, but this is the first time I've come across it in my own family, that you should look at all of the enslaved people listed in these pre-Civil War documents like probate files, because they could be relatives. It turns out that this guy is related to me through the Garrett line somehow. Not sure how, but he was the only one mentioned in the will who to be sold. He was purchased by the decedent's brother-in-law. And clearly that place in Lawrence, South Carolina was our only connection. So I would say DNA on top of the traditional research and records that you have to do.
It's amazing that sometimes in families, due to the circumstance that a person is raised in a family as a sibling, but that person is not a sibling. That person could have been taken in because they was abandoned by their other family or whatever.
I've come across that.
Yeah.
And a situation where a son had a child out of wedlock who was raised by his parents into their adulthood. His siblings or the next generation thought that was an aunt when she in fact was their first cousin. And only back in 2014, just connected with descendants of that child who lived in Red Hook, like a bunch of guys named Garrett, and I would not have known that they were related, even though I had relatives who lived in Red Hook. That happens too. This is where research comes in, because sometimes you come across records that would give you that information. And sometimes it's not absolutely necessary to publicize it because the person is your relative. But to produce an accurate history, you would want to know this.
Wow. Hey, Stephen, I just want to say this now. Someone I was speaking with 2 weeks ago, I've known for years, is a mill house. And when she found out that my family, the Stromans, were from Orangeburg, she said, wait a minute, my family, the mill houses, are from Orangeburg. So I just throw that out to you. That's something else we need to look into. And if you come across, or if you have come across any mill houses, I'm curious about that.
Okay. Jennifer, you have a comment? I have some interesting stories that have come about, some just in the last 2-3 weeks. But first of all, I want to line up you for team in terms of how we are related. Because folks out there, we are related. You remember?
Right. We are related. And folks, like I said, I wasn't born Fatima Muhammad. I was born Ernest D. Leon Strong. I am not ashamed of my name. It's just that I became in the media and became popular as Fatima Muhammad. But by me putting on my Facebook, Ernest Stroman, that is how Stephen honestly identified and connected with me in a sense of the relationship.
Yes. As a matter of fact, in 1994, 95, around that era, you were the producer of the show. Bob Slade asked me to come on the show because I was the president of the African American Leadership Summit here in New York. So I met Brother Fatim then. And over the years, we kept in contact by Facebook and saying hello and stuff like that, but never anything intense. And then when he put that on his Facebook thing, whoa, wait a minute. My mother was named Stroman. So I called him up. And we talked, and I told him, give me a half an hour. And I called him back and told him, your grandfather, even though I'm older than him, his grandfather and my great-grandfather were brothers.
There you go.
Small world. Now, my LaBrenda story, as LaBrenda said earlier, that her ex-husband was Reginald Bowman, and Reginald Bowman's grandfather was Ransom Bowman. And Ransom Bowman was the son of Grant Bowman. And Grant Bowman was the younger brother of my great-great-grandfather, Andrew Bowman. You never know. I've known Reginald for 25 years, on and off. My last story, I'm laying in bed in the morning. Generally, I send out songs of the day to certain people. And in sending out a song for a day, I happened to go to Facebook and there was this girl's picture on there. And she was the executive director of minority videos at Comcast. I said, since I'm doing this YouTube video podcast show, she'd probably be a good person to know. So I went to her page, her profile. And then I looked to see whether there were some people on her friends that I might know that might know her too. The first three persons were relatives. I sent out a text to one relative who I haven't met yet, but we've been going back and forth, and his name is Stroman. And then I sent to another relative that I knew. I haven't met her, I haven't talked to her, but I knew that she was a relative. She sent back a note, says, yes, that's my daughter, and she's your cousin. Is that not crazy?
That's, you know, and I just want to say this, Stephen, on this and to other guests here. You see why I say I get angry and then disappointed? Because when Stephen connected with me and started saying how we were related, when I hung up the phone, I wanted to call my father. Can't call him. He's gone. But the story Stephen told me is even, that's why I said I just get disappointed. I was born on Rutland Road. Wow. 79 Rutland Road. When I say I was born in Kings County Hospital, my parents lived at 79 Rutland Road. When I came home, brought home from the hospital, 1 month later, my father took the super job around the corner up the block on Flatbush in Rutland. Stephen lived on Rutland Road. That means he had to walk back and forth to Flatbush if he traveled by train to go to either Lincoln Road or Parkside Avenue. And he probably encountered my father, but didn't know that they were related. That's why I say it hurts.
There was another brother that I did not know that lived down the street on Empire Boulevard.
Wow.
So that shows how important it is in terms of knowing who our roots are. Yes. I've been working quite a bit with my grandchildren in terms of a play that I wrote about all the research that I've done called When the Break Happened in Orangeburg County. And it has been such a delight to work with my grandchildren on this particular project. Now, I don't want to put you on the spot, Jennifer, but how does, in her private time, what does Jewel think about her family history?
My daughter is 9. And she loves, as a matter of fact, we have a friend who's visiting this week. She was like, I am famous. I made a commercial about my play. And she's so excited about it. She thinks that it's cool that She has a grandpa, Stephen, and a great-grandpa, Stephen, and a cousin named Stephen, and an uncle named Stephen, and a great-grandfather named Stephen, and she knows about it. And she's, Mommy, she's like, we could actually name our, if I have a daughter, her name could be Stephanie. And I was like, it could be. It's really interesting to see that she's so interested in her family history now. She wants to know who else could be. We can be actually related to some stars. Like, let's see if we're related to Jay-Z and Beyonce. And she's just, because they're Black too, so we could be relatives. It's just opened her mind to the possibility that there are other people, other relatives out there. And especially since she's the only child. I grew up with 8 or 9 cousins. So I had 9 first cousins that way. We were all lived in Brooklyn. We were together all the time. We were at my aunt's house or my grandparents' house. But my daughter doesn't have that same experience because she just has 2 first cousins who live in Florida. And she has another first cousin who lives in Seattle. So she doesn't have this sense of family and doing things. So when my cousins call, she's like, you have all these cousins. And my husband has, his mother has 10 brothers and sisters. And his father has 10 brothers and sisters. So they have all this big, large family, and she sees them. But for us, we have a very small family. But now she's, I have more family than possibly daddy because we have all these other cousins that she's now being aware of. So for her, it's exciting to know that she has family besides myself and her father.
See, which is amazing cool. And wonderful because there are adults, Black adults, who may or may not know all 4 of their grandparents, but could not name their 8 great-grandparents, any of them.
On my father's side, I saw my grandmother. I interact with her, but any other my grandparents, my mother's parents didn't know, didn't see, and I didn't meet my grandfather. But you mentioned something, LaBrenda, about the DNA, which I'm very concerned about, because you have to realize that we still are connecting with slave names because of ownership. We are only Strowmans and Davises and Johnsons because we were on plantations owned. But what happened when that sister was sold to the Johnson? Yeah.
I think I'm a bit older than you. I recall a time when I first shampooed my hair and didn't straighten it, and my dad was so upset. I came home one day after I attended, it used to be something called Brothers and Sisters for Afro-American Unity. It was a club at City College, and my older cousin had taken me and her sister there. And I came home and said, I'm not a Garrett, it's a slave name. And my dad said, I'm not giving you a penny. If you're not a Garrett, you're not getting an allowance. I went through that phrase. And then I read something, and I'm trying to think of what great Black historian pointed this out, that after you've used the name for a couple of hundred years, as I can document Black Garretts have done, it becomes your name. And it would be wonderful if we could recover what we were called when we came here. That's going to be hard for most folk to do. So I attached it's a white name, English name, I understand that, but I identify it with my African-American family. That's how I view that.
But what I'm saying is, I'm sorry, Stephen, real quick, let's deal with the Garretts. Let's say the Garretts come from, after so many hundreds of years, you go back, you realize that the Garretts was on a plantation, but 2 sisters were sold from the Garrett plantation and went to the Johnson plantation, and they became Johnsons.
Right.
And there's no name recognition, so that's where DNA would come in, right?
That's the example I was giving you of this man. His name was Robinson Martin. He was purchased by someone with a different surname, but his descendants are using a different surname today, but they clearly are related to all of my Garretts. And that is something to look to. People were sold away. We all lived under the constant threat of being separated from our families.
Where DNA would come in with this, is that where DNA would come in?
This is what I'm saying, that DNA connected me to this family that's descended from this man who was on the same inventory of enslaved people in a Garrett estate in 1853.
Now, I have this for you, LaBrenda. You probably already know, but I think the audience would find it very intriguing. Your daughter's great grandfather, Ransom Bowman, his brother was named Mortimer. And Mortimer had a wife named Mamie Quick Bowman. And the Quicks were very prominent in South Carolina, enough so that her nephew, who she was a Bowman, remember, so this, your daughter can claim this, even much more than Jennifer and I can, because you all came from the same line. your daughter came from the same line, is her nephew was Charles Quick. And Charles Quick was one of the attorneys that helped win the Brown versus Board of Education.
I think you shared that with me before, and I think I share it with you. And this is also the value of knowing this stuff about your family. Because when I graduated from law school, I believed that I was the first lawyer in my Garrett family. I did not know that my great-grandfather had a first cousin who was licensed to practice law in 1890 in South Carolina. I've seen his license. And I did not know that my great-grandfather had a sister. I knew about her. I didn't know that she had a grandchild. I didn't know this until I read his obituary, who was at Howard Law School when they were working on Brown versus Board of Education. He like did some research on that. There are all of these connections.
Yes.
And I think that knowing that kind of stuff would help a young person, that you, other people who faced greater hardships than you will ever face did this. You can too.
Yes. And then one other, Ransom's brother, Malachi Bowman, his wife was named Flossie. And Flossie was one of the educators of South Carolina for Black students. She was a powerhouse in South Carolina education. It's relative that we just don't know about.
I'm going to send you, I think I have a write-up. I have a Garrett, a third cousin who's a Garrett. You might have come across her name. She's worked for years for the South Carolina Public Television Station. Her name is Beryl Dakers, but her mother was a Bowman from Bowmantown. Okay. And I've done research on her and haven't connected her to the Bowmans that my daughter descends from, but there probably is a connection. I just haven't found it yet.
This is amazing. This is amazing. I thank you all for the work that y'all are doing. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
When I wrote When the Break Happened in Orangeburg County, although I'm not advertising per se, but then again, I am. At some point, I'm going to want to have produced, hopefully later on this year, so yes. But the idea was that, and that's why I wanted to have my daughter on, is because I was so proud of her getting her doctor's degree, just wonderfully proud. But I also was conscious of the past, the path that she got there to get there, the genes that she got in on all sides to help her and to remind her that yes, you did this, but you didn't do this by yourself. And one of the greatest examples of that in the play that I write about was Julia Holman, who died in 1917 at age 20 years old. Now, at that particular time, you didn't think of Black women going to college. She died from a lightning strike on the day of her birthday. She was struck by lightning and died. They were celebrating her going back to Allen University, where I think she was beginning her senior year. But at that particular time, people in communities pulled their monies and sent one person. That was their hope, that one person that they sent to college. And for her to have died in that manner was definitely a major blow to that community. But as Maya wrote, and still we rise. We still rise above that, and we've been doing that for years. I want to talk finally about benefits in terms of doing your family history. And of course, we're gonna start with you, LaBrenda.
I touched on it earlier. Part of doing good genealogy is understanding historical context. I heard Professor Philip Antiba Goff, he was on MSNBC a couple of weeks ago, and he said something that resonated with me. He said that Americans generally are just historically illiterate, and that is true about our young people also, to some extent. We don't learn real history. You really can't do this work and appreciate what our ancestors survived without understanding historical context, and how there really isn't anything new under the sun. So I see that alone as a benefit, understanding more about history. And I'll tell you just very quickly that last year I published an article in the National Genealogical Society Quarterly. And the National, it's one of the handful of peer-reviewed genealogy journals. And it's produced by an organization that as recently as 1960, there was a report in the Washington Post and then in an Alabama newspaper saying that they voted not to bar Negroes from applying. They've come a long way since then. So now there are Black people on their board. They published the first peer-reviewed article about an enslaved family. So I published this article, and you can submit vintage images or photographs that they put on the cover. So not only did I publish the article, I submitted a photo of my Garrett great-grandfather, and just very coincidentally, because it was the June issue, it was days after George Floyd's killing. And then I wrote this Facebook post that they actually reprinted in their online publication, because I said, you have on your cover, this image was submitted months ago, but on your cover is a man whose 19-year-old son was killed by a peace officer after he was asked to step outside a church. And the article, the news article, which they reprinted in the journal also, could have been taken from today's headlines. This white peace officer, first of all, he lied and said that the church officers had asked him to come to the church on a Saturday night because of unruly elements. No Black person asked a white peace officer to come to a little rural church on a Saturday night. And then he said he was told that the Negro might have a gun, and he, as they were leaving, it was dark, and he made a sudden move as if to draw a gun. And all of that, and when I posted that on Facebook, everybody started posting about similar stories in their families. This is not a new phenomenon. It's just a continuation of what has been happening to Black lives since slavery, before slavery, during slavery, and since slavery. And our children need to know all of this history.
Exactly.
What about the medical benefits?
Well, that's another thing. 23andMe is the DNA company that focuses on that. I personally haven't opted into that, but there is something to know. That's something that some folk are interested in. Some folks have genetic predispositions for different things. That's not something I've looked into. Although I should say this, there is a controversy about DNA tests for Black folks. Some folks don't trust it because law enforcement, there've been instances when law enforcement has been allowed to fish through these public databases. Some companies like Ancestry are, and I think 23andMe also, would not allow that to happen. But any law enforcement official could get a subpoena if they had enough to go on to do this. There were instances where the companies, other companies allowed them to upload DNA from a crime scene to see if they matched anyone. And there's a whole controversy about that. And some people don't want to take DNA tests for that reason. And what I say about that is that you just have to make sure that people give you informed consent. If you're asking someone to test their DNA, they should understand the risk and the ramifications.
My mother took a DNA test. She died in 2018. For some reason, I wasn't able to get into her ancestry. She had given me the password, but I didn't know where I put it at. And one day last week, it popped up on my computer, the passwords. So I went into her ancestry, and there were some messages. One of the messages, which was from last month, was from someone that said that they took a DNA test, and that thinking that they're talking to my mother, they said that we're cousins. And as it turned out, she was absolutely right. My mother's grandmother and her grandfather were brother and sisters. So in some instances, it works. And some, I have not taken one. I guess I don't want to know anything different than what I know now.
The article that I published last year, I was excited about it for two reasons. One, because it gave me an opportunity to document my Garrett line as far as I could with documents. But the thrust of the article was using DNA to confirm oral tradition. Because even with the records that are there, there are going to be gaps in our knowledge because of what we were subjected to during slavery, because we didn't keep our own records and were really recorded with surnames and the differences in surnames. So the DNA was icing on the cake to confirm our oral tradition about where we came from, as far as we knew. And so that's another thing about why I did it and what made the article interesting to a lot of folks. Because what you'll hear is that oral history is denigrated. But in many cases, that's what we have to go on.
I'm going to let you all, each one of you all, have a final word before we close out. And I'm going to start with Dr. Jennifer Williams.
This has been definitely great to be able to meet with you guys today and speak with you. Really understanding that we have resources available to us And LaBrenda, you're definitely a great resource to know that we have available. I will be calling you. I do an annual Girls Who Code conference, and I think that you would be a great person to talk to because we were talking about coding our ancestry. So it may be cool to connect with you on that part, especially for our girls of color. I always like to include people who look like our girls. And a lot of the speakers who are doing STEM and technology don't look like us. So we're that 0.02% who graduates from college. And knowing that when you have resources, people who are educated, who can tell our girls some information, even the boys about their lives, just they may not even know that this career path is available for them. I'm going to ask a couple of them this week. Do they understand what a genealogist does and what genealogy means, just to see what they know? But it's really nice to hear that there are people who you can reach out to other than trying to navigate everything yourself. In saying that there are classes, like when our young people are going to college, this could be a class that you may want to be interested in. A lot of times you get the book or you scroll through, you see all the classes and you don't know what would be a cool elective. This is something that I can really refer to them. So I really enjoyed meeting with you. And the Brother Fatine, I spoke to you before on the meetings, but it's really nice to see that we share something. We share the anger, the disappointment that when you think about it, I was watching Underground.
I deliberately didn't because it would make me too angry.
My husband, these kind of shows, I'm like, I just want to know. When you think about it, when people were leaving and going on different parts of the Underground Railroad or leaving their family behind or people were being sold off from one place to another, then you have to assume this new identity and no one cared. They would even rename your first name if they wanted to. Like, nope, no longer. I know I told you were Toby, but now you're Jonathan. And now you're Jonathan. It's so hard to track where you possibly could have come from or who were your real relatives. So when you said that you're not alone, there are a lot of people who feel the same, disappointed, disenfranchised from the whole understanding of who you truly are. And even within the 60s and 70s, you hear about families hiding children and not really telling you who you were, like you were really the child of your person who you grew up and thought it was your sister or brother. And we keep doing that. And there's sometimes, even now, people still do that. They don't tell you who you really are. So really, you really have a sense of something inside is longing to know the truth. So really making sure that we're truthful in who we are and our identity, and making sure that everybody knows where they truly come from is important for families today too.
Fatine?
I appreciate that, Sister Jennifer. You're right. Just the same way as folks that might've got a chance to watch the Aretha Franklin story that just came on last week. And they made it seem like, oh, Aretha had a child when she was a child, you understand? And that did happen. It did happen, but those things were hidden. Those children were, they were raised in the family, and that is your bigger sister, but that's honestly your mom's. And these are the things that you don't find out. And this is where the travesty and the injustice that comes forward. And just to see what we have gone through as a people. But when you have folks like your father, Stephen, and then LaBrenda that has taken her expertise in a sense of what she's done in one world and now applying it to tracing the roots of families and written a book about the folks in South Carolina in that community, it shows that even amongst our anger, there's still something that can still come out of it. It shows that we are a mighty and amazing people. It's not just a title that is just given to us. It proves that we've been through a lot. Other folks have been through a lot. We understand the Jewish Holocaust, but people honestly do not really understand the depths of what slavery has done to people of color. And I'll be honest with you, and I do not bite my tongue. Some white folks would rather wash away that history, because you got to realize the same way we have ancestors that suffered, they had ancestors that placed that suffering on our families out there. And they would just want that to be washed away. But no, I'm sorry. We have to know our history.
You just said so much truth. We saw that. The famous example is Ben Affleck, who got PBS in trouble because he did not want his slaveholding ancestor mentioned on his segment. and they don't want to. That's one part of it. That's true.
I remember when it was front page news when Reverend Sharpton did something with Ancestry.com, and come to find out, here's a civil rights activist fighting against racism out here, and he's related to Strom Thurmond. You understand?
There's one peer-reviewed study by doctors. They figured out a couple of things. African-American families out of slavery were more closely related to Southern whites than to Northern whites. And about 3-point-something percent of white Americans have sub-Saharan African DNA. But that 3-something percent translates into millions of white folks who have sub-Saharan African DNA. So much truth in everything that you just said. I really do see it as my mission to use the skills I use for 35 years keeping corporate America safe to apply it to this discipline and to focus on African-American genealogy. I actually had a person, a white person, say to me that I was limiting my opportunities for writing and lecturing because I don't make any bones about that. My focus and interest is on African-American genealogy.
And I just want to say this, let me just say this last thing and I'll wrap up, is that you have mentioned the story of Stephen about how family members, and I come up in that time when we would associate those from the islands as coconuts. And of course, that's just a learning process out there. But there was a movie that I watched, and I just want to leave this with all folks, that if you have not seen this movie, please go out there. And there's numerous movies out there that teach you about our history and this, that, and that. But the movie is Sankofa. And the reason why I bring up Sankofa, because Sankofa was the first slave movie that I saw a person from the South with the Southern drawl standing next to another person with accent from the Caribbean island. And it shows that they were in the same land here in America with that different dialect right there. But it showed that we, because of our pigmentation, we still suffered under the banner of slavery. So I just wanna thank you all for just being part of this process today. Thank you.
Yes, LaBrenda, I want you to give the audience how they can contact you and your organization.
The Board for Certification of Genealogists is just bcgcertification.org. But I have a website. It's, I think if you Google just my name, it comes up, but it's L.A.B. Garrett Genealogy. And those are two ways that folks could contact me. But it's the Board for Certification of Genealogists is the organization that I'm president on. And I'm proud to say this also, that last year, it too weighed in on this focus on social justice. And so we established a scholarship for genealogists who are African-American to attend institutes. And we named it after Paul Sloubi, who was the first African-American to be credentialed back in 1973.
This has been such a wonderful show. Thank you so much, all of you all, for being part of it. And we got to do this again, because this is such an interesting topic to continue to talk about. And that's it. The show about stuff, the Stephen Davis Show. Goodbye.
Thank you for tuning in this week. Hope you enjoyed this show about stuff. See you next time.
The Break Store. Unique branded gifts for the holidays, birthdays, or just because. Visit us at www.thebreakstore.com. Hit the right black get in touch button.